everyone in cyberspace, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film, currently not in theaters. My name is Tyler, the temporary host, and tonight we're going with Gene's picks and talking about Weekend at Bernie's duology, Weekend at Bernie's the first time from 1989, and Weekend at Bernie's 2 from 1993. If you're just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with the character name game, which we won't be playing today. Transition into our media consume section, which we will be doing today. Our review of the week, listener emails, listener voicemails. You can always leave us a voicemail, 904-469-NJNM, or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can find every episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. With me today is managing editor of GordonandtheWhale.com, Kate Erbland.
Kate. Hey!
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the enthusiasm I want. And soundtrack dominator from Gordon and the World, Allison Lauren. How you doing, Alice?
I love that intro. I'm doing very good now.
I wrote it up. I prepared it.
I love it. I love
now, it. Now, we had mentioned off camera a movie podcast you guys were talking about. Are you guys going to do this?
I really want to know because
I want to be a fan.
You want to be a fan? You know, it's an idea we've been toying with, and now that you've kind of put a name to it, I feel like it's going to have to happen.
All right. Executive producer. That's the only credit I want.
Exactly. Credit you will get.
All right, sweet. Anything else going on? Any movie news you guys want to talk about?
Managing editor, I defer to you on that one.
I actually just on my brain right now is a piece of news I posted just like an hour ago, which is about a new project for Kristen Wiig, which is apparently a passion project of hers called Imogen.
Ooh.
Which she's going to be starring in and executive producing, and she'll be starring as a playwright who decides to catch the eye of her ex-boyfriend by trying to kill herself. But I think that it backfires hilariously.
Mm. Record scratch.
Naturally. Suicide. Lots of laughs. But I just mentioned this because Kristen Wiig also has a book option that she wanted to star in called Clown Girl. And I got really excited when I saw the headline that she was about to do a passion project thinking it was Clown Girl. And it's not, but this one sounds good too. So, but also Clown Girl. I'm just going to keep talking about it until it gets made, until it happens.
So yeah. Passion project means she's like writing it and
she kind of brought together the directors who are the two directors who did The Nanny Diaries and the screenwriter. And she's been trying to produce it for like 2 years. But now that she has the sort of value of her name after Bridesmaids, I guess she can kind of start doing what she wants to do. So that's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, cool.
Anything else? We can move on.
I don't know. The Dark Knight Rises trailer. People are posting synopses of trailers that aren't even out yet.
I know. There's a poster, too, if you've never seen a picture of the bat symbol before.
Yeah. I had no idea what the bat symbol looked like.
Yeah.
It looks like a bat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Weird. This time, it looks gritty. Like, the first two movies.
Gritty.
No, I mean, the first two Christopher Nolan Batman movies were so, like, happy and sunny.
Yeah.
They've taken a turn.
Yeah. Clearly.
Almost like a 1950s Disney movie.
Yes, totally.
Very much so.
Glad someone agrees with me on that. like I mentioned, we're not playing the character name game today because I invented, and by invented I mean, you know, lazily put together a new game. And we can play that right now, or we can wait till the end as like a climax to the podcast. It's up to you guys.
I feel like we should wait till the end. Give the, something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because that's how it's written in my notes.
Perfect. There you go.
Yay!
I guess moving on to media consumed, what we've been watching recently, TV shows, movies, documentaries, hobo robberies, concerts. Kate, let's start with you. What have you been watching this week?
This week, I mean, it's still pretty early in the week. Yesterday, I just saw.
Let's refer back to last week as well, then.
You can last week, I guess the big press screening was Horrible Bosses.
Oh, okay.
I liked. I wasn't crazy about it. It's funny because I feel like it could have been funnier, but it also could have been a lot meaner.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have liked it if it was too mean. So, I don't know. I'm still kind of on the fence about it. I really liked Jason Bateman and Jason Sudeikis and Charlie Day together. I thought they were really funny together. Everyone else was a little bit, you know, off the rails. Like, obviously, Colin Farrell's character is nuts, and Jennifer Aniston terrified me. But, you know, it could have been worse. It's one of those old, oh, well, it's not perfect. But, you know, it's definitely, for an R-rated comedy, it was one that I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And I could recommend, yeah.
So it's a pretty solid R-rated comedy.
Yeah.
That's good.
I felt like they could have pushed it a little bit more.
There definitely could have been more nudity.
Yeah.
Well, that's to say for every movie, really.
Yeah.
Very true.
Anything else?
What else have we...
Shamefully, the only thing I think I've watched this week so far was a DVD of Unstoppable last night.
Ooh.
Which was stoppable, because I think I kept walking out of the room throughout the movie because it just was not holding my intention.
I'm not in charge of any child's daycare.
Exactly. I'm not working in this old folks home. All right. This is terrible already. That one didn't quite grab my attention as much as I thought.
Also not enough nudity.
There wasn't. That is
good point.
There wasn't enough nudity in that. I was teased with a bit of nudity at the beginning from Mr. Chris Pine, and that was quite the lie, because that never came back around. He and Denzel never decided just to strip down on that train for no good reason.
To help stop the train.
Exactly. I'm going to take my shirt off because that will help. I mean, he did almost lose a foot at one point, and I kept thinking maybe I'll take his shirt off and wrap the foot in it. I don't know.
You should have been writing the script. Those plot points are critical.
I mean, obviously. Yeah, you're right.
I think it might be a riffable movie, because I know Doug Benson has been doing, like, Benson the Interruption. Or I don't know what he does. He does his live comedy things, and he'll show a movie and talk through it the whole time, and one of them recently was Unstoppable.
I feel like that could be a good movie for that.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's so repetitive. It's like so much of the same thing. Like, obviously, it's going to be repetitive. I mean, you can't really mix it up that much, but I mean, Christ. But yeah, and Denzel Washington playing Denzel Washington was great, definitely.
Always good. Are you good, Kate? Can we move on?
I mean, I can't think of anything else. I don't know.
Another curveball to throw us? No pun intended, since the All Star.
No. Sadly, no.
Allison, you got anything good for us? What you've been watching this week?
Other than that shameful, unstoppable movie, I'm trying to think. Now I'm trying to think of last week. I also went to the Horrible Bosses screening with Kate, and agreed that it was a funny comedy for what it is. You know, it didn't break any new ground so much, but I enjoyed it. But I'm also a very big Charlie Day fan.
Yeah.
So I think I could probably watch that man do just about anything and find it hilarious. So Kitten Mittens, man. Exactly.
Tell him about Kitten Mittens.
Okay, so Kitten Mittens, as we all well know from It's Always Sunny fame, when they were doing the DVD for that season, they really wanted to feature more Kitten Mittens because that was such a huge hit. And lo and behold, one of our friends works in, you know, the world of TV and heard about this. And I guess it was like a kiddie casting call. And they happen to have a hairless cat who is quite adorable. And he decided to, you know, throw her into the ring for this one. And they showed up at his house and put poor Kitten Mittens on this cat and shoved her around their hardwood floor. And she was not pleased with her television debut. But if you do go on the DVD special features for that season, you can see our good friend Peanut, the hairless cat, in all her glory. Looking really pissed and Kitten
really
Mittens.
Pissed. They don't like the Kitten Mittens, but, you know, what are you going to do?
They're so loud, though. They need them.
I know, they do. We kept telling her, this is better for us, and she didn't seem to care.
No.
So selfish.
No, that cat is not a giver.
Not at all.
Nice. So Horrible Bosses, go see it. Wait to DVD. What are we doing here?
I'd say go see it.
Yeah. All right. It's a fun summer flick. You know, it's a good time for that. And you'll laugh. It's funny. It's not unenjoyable.
All right.
And maybe don't rent or pay $30 a month to rent via Netflix now, Unstoppable.
Should we talk about
that?
Let's talk about that. Media Consumed is now getting political.
Yes.
Netflix hiked up their prices. I believe it used to be $9.99 for one disc out at a time, plus instant streaming. Now they've separated that into two separate plans, both priced at $7.99, I believe, and you can get one disc at a time plus instant watch for what, $15.99 now?
I think it's unlimited DVDs. It was like the unlimited stuff that they'd separated, because I read the press release today. I wrote it up, but I think it was unlimited.
Oh, because I got a DVD, or I got an email today from Netflix saying that my plan has been split. The one disc at a time plus instant has been split, and I can continue paying $50.99 for what I have now. So I got a price hike of like $5.
I love it when they do that. You can keep this service and give us more money because this is helping you.
Right. Now, I will agree, what I get out of Netflix probably is worth the $15 a month, but don't jerk me around like $5 hikes.
Exactly.
Right away. You know, $1 at a time maybe is more acceptable.
I like to be tricked into my bamboozlement and
having stolen
from me. I don't like it to be so blatant.
Well, I'm just afraid that it's going to kind of set a precedent, because if you read the press release, they kind of make it out to be like, oh, they're doing this because, oh, God, we forgot how much DVDs cost.
Right.
And we thought that everyone would want the streaming. And we were wrong. People love DVDs. And that, I mean, they could keep doing that forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really don't care for the DVDs. I mean, I'll get a DVD if it's a newer movie.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not out to watch like 6 seasons of any show on DVD. Like, I'll just wait till it's on instant watch, because they have like all those shows packed together now, so you hardly even have to navigate.
Exactly.
You just watch season 1 through 7 in a weekend.
You just press play and they go.
Although, as far as interface, there should be an autoplay when you're watching TV, because I have to get up and, well, I have to get up and operate my computer. I don't have a laptop. Click next episode every time.
That is annoying.
So if they're listening, please fix that.
Netflix, please add that feature at least if you're going to charge us more.
Now, you think this is going to be a big problem for business?
From the reactions today, I don't think it's going to be a good thing. People seem pretty riled up about it. But if I'm being honest, I'm lazy. So I don't know if I'll like take a stand and be like, I'm taking my business elsewhere.
Right.
And you know, I don't know how many people out there are like that, you know, where they're already set up with it. And it's just like, oh, forget it. It's just not that much more to make a big, huge deal. But I know people were not pleased when the news hit today. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what ends up happening.
Yeah, because I know there's, like, a Hulu service, like Hulu Plus. I don't know what the prices are for that. And then, like,
Right, and I think Amazon is getting in on the game now, too. People have been talking about that they like that service. So there's definitely competition that we're going to have to contest with on this.
Yeah, rising prices probably isn't the best course of action now.
Yeah, not the best
customers.
Exactly. You don't have a monopoly yet, Netflix. Calm down.
All right, well, I guess I'll talk about what I've been watching.
Yes, please.
I watched this Japanese film called Battle Royale from 2001. Have you guys ever heard of this? Have you seen it?
I have heard of it. I've never seen it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah.
Seen a trailer for it?
I haven't.
Oh, it is. It is weird, because I watched it this weekend, and apparently Battle Royale refers to a certain government act that is put into place where legally you can get a classroom full of children, like 7th, 8th graders, and put them on an island and have them kill each other, Lord of the Flies style.
Well, to the Hunger Games? What is this?
It's a little twist on Lord of the Flies, because each student gets a bag of weapons.
Oh.
And it depends, like, it's all a big surprise what weapon you get. Like, some may get, like, a hammer, some may get, like, a bazooka. It all depends. And some of the kids crack, and some of the kids try to form groups and live lives, and others just want to kill everybody. So it's kind of interesting but disturbing film. Yeah. And there were, like, random flashbacks throughout the film that we were supposed to get. I didn't get. And then at the end of the movie, they showed the flashbacks in their entirety, one after another. So I was like, I don't know how you built your movie, but this isn't the correct way to do it.
This is not the way to do that.
If you're going
to
show a flashback, show it in its entirety where it belongs in the movie. Don't show me at the end.
Everybody right, exactly.
Dead at that point.
Exactly.
Then I found out there's a Battle Royale, too. So.
How can there be a sequel to that? Just more kids killing?
Presumably, I haven't seen it yet.
Damn it.
You have to see it and report back.
All right, I will. The other riveting... You
know, kind of interesting.
What's
it was
that?
Just, was it a good film, or was it just not put together? Well, because it sounds kind of interesting.
I watched it, but I was kind of baffled by the kind of the content. Because, you know, it was this teacher, and he disappeared, but then he reappeared. So, like a mastermind the whole time. And then there was some type of relationship he had with one of the students.
Of course.
And it was, like, a lot of stuff was like, did he do anything with this kid?
Right.
But they never came out and said it.
Oh, I see,
and,
I see.
It was with subtitles, so...
Oh,
that, sometimes. That was the experience I had to read.
Yeah, you've already lost us. Reading.
And it was funny because I was watching with a friend, and he was saying how the people that were typing up the subtitles didn't know context or grammar or normal English sayings. So a lot of the subtitles were really messed up. So I guess it had some humor to it as well.
Okay. Well, at least that would have been entertaining.
Yeah, it was. It was.
We had a friend who actually used to write subtitles, and he wasn't very smart. So I can't imagine, you know, I sense what you're saying here.
Yeah. I always have a problem with, like, cable news when they're closed captioning, because those are so full of mistakes.
Well, because they're doing them right then, so they're just clapping away, and it's like whatever they hear, you know, God knows.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it.
No way.
No.
All right, let's slow this podcast down a little bit with my boring ramblings on closed captioning. The other piece of cinema I watched was a documentary on origami called Between the Folds.
It was,
it was produced, I believe, by PBS, a public broadcasting station.
Yes.
And it was about folding paper.
You don't say.
They tried so hard to make origami exciting.
Issue in the house.
Yeah. Are you emptying out your dishwasher while we do this?
Please go. The boys are fighting.
Okay.
For a paper bag.
Is it a hobo robbery? I thought you guys were supposed to bring that up earlier.
It is a hobo robbery. A hobo robbery is definitely.
This is going in. This is not it. I'm not editing.
You're not editing? Oh, good. I'm so glad because things have taken a turn in this house.
She pulled out her butterfly knife. Things are getting bloody.
Things are getting intense. I think the cat somehow got trapped in a bag.
I need a pair of scissors.
Oh, my God. All right. And we have to cut him out of the bag.
Okay.
Yeah. Please don't cut this out of the podcast. This is
going in. Folks, joining us, Allison Loring is joining us along with Kater Blank.
Okay.
Both
we're going to perform kitten surgery.
They're having illegal cat fights in their house.
We are having illegal cat fights. This is how we make our money.
This kind of stuff shouldn't be going down, folks. No. Trying to continue to host the podcast while things are going awry.
I think we have things under control.
Okay, good.
Things are somewhat under control. I can't imagine what that sounded like.
Rest easy, folks. Everything is under control. The cats are dead.
Yeah. The cats did not live.
Hey, so. Get the shovel.
Oh, my God.
It'll be a long, muddy night.
Everything's great. Yeah. Okay, so back to the origami.
Yeah, back to the... I mean, they were playing with paper. Maybe they just got really into the idea. Exactly.
Yes, this documentary called Between the Folds was about paper folding, and what I have to say about it was slightly boring but interesting because, you know, you never really think that hard about origami, which is folding paper, and you know, there was the artist. You know, they each had, like, a character from the origami world.
Oh, okay. Are there characters in the origami world? I don't even know about this.
Yeah, there's different, like, schools of thought when it comes to origami. So there's the artist who does it, you know, for the creativity of it all. And his really badass. Like, he was making, like, trolls that stood up and fantasy-themed paper. Like, it was ridiculous. And then there was the postmodern artist who was, you know, pretty much a douchey about his origami. And he believed in this one-fold origami where he would just take a piece of paper and do one fold and then that... Wow. So, like, origami enthusiasts hate him because he doesn't put any work into what he does as far as folding paper.
Does he do, like, the one fold and he's like, oh, it's a bird? And you're like, no?
No, he kind of just, he folds it and then he steps back and he says, what do you see?
Oh,
and,
God.
And then that's like, and then you're supposed to set up a viewing gallery, I guess, for that.
Got it.
You're bored with money. And then finally the last school was, like, the science school where they used computers to fold the paper. So those were, like, really intricate and all measured out and had, like, 2,000 or 4,000 or 10,000 steps to finish one project. So it got pretty intense, but it's on instant watch.
Okay.
So Between the Folds, not Behind the Folds.
It's
like a Ben Folds documentary. The Folds, PBS documentary on origami.
Nice. Well, it sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was. It was only 50 minutes, so.
Oh, okay.
Don't waste your time.
No.
All right, now that we got all that stuff out of the way, let's talk about Weekend at Bernie's. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Don't you see? We just uncovered a $2 million error. We're going to be heroes. We're going up the corporate ladder.
It appears as if somebody's trying to defraud the company.
Somebody tried to smoke it past the wrong guy.
Very, very good work. How would you two like to come to my house at the beach?
Love to!
For Larry and Richard.
How are you?
This is a place to die for.
You have to kill them, Vito.
I'm a little rusty, but it'll come back to me.
What, should we just walk in?
But what they don't realize...
No, we'll stand out here all weekend. Come on, we're out here.
...is while they're checking in...
Forget the accident with the two guys. Take care of Lomax.
Bernie Lomax will be checking out.
Oh, my God! What kind of a host invites you to his house for the weekend and dies on you?
I don't know.
Lomax told whoever he's talking to not to kill us if he's around, right?
Yeah, but Lomax is dead. He's not around anybody anymore.
I know that. You know that. Nobody else knows that. Huh?
Oh! Push for it. It looks good enough. Let's go.
Uh-oh. Larry.
What?
Huh?
Oh.
Really?
Hi, Bernie. Hey, Bernie, just like last week, huh?
You animal, you are insatiable.
Doesn't anyone realize he's dead?
Hold the boat! Got him? Huh? Hold the boat!
Vito, I'm telling you, Lomax is alive. Maybe Paulie is rustier than we thought.
Ooh, Bernie, you're starting to peel. Gotta get you out of the sun, huh?
Is that the killer?
How do I know, Richard? Should I stop and ask him?
No,
just drive! Serpentine! Do you hear something? What is that?
It's just Bernie!
Weekend at Bernie's.
Are we doing it again today?
Oh, absolutely. You know we are.
Great. We'll see you later, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, ladies. We'll see you later.
God, is this great or what?
Weekend at Bernie's was made in 1989, and I'm looking at it currently. It was directed by, I'm so lazy when it comes to this, Ted Kochef, written by Robert Klein, and starring Andrew McCarthy, Jonathan Silverman, and Terry Kaiser as Bernie Lomax. From what I was hearing, you guys went to some type of party that featured both of these movies. Can you tell us what you guys, let's say, what were you guys going in thinking the movie's going like? Had you seen them before? What are your thoughts about these films?
We have a theater here in Los Angeles in downtown LA called the Downtown Independent, and I guess they do these drink alongs every once a month. And this is the first one we'd ever been to. Mm. We went because we love Weekend at Bernie's, and
shamefully so.
Yeah, shamefully so. And they were showing both films, and then they have beer there, and they have a rooftop patio, and you can play beer pong, and for $10 you got one beer and two movies. I was like, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
And they, before they start the movie, they give you a drinking game and everyone plays along and it's really fun. So I figured Weekend at Bernie's would be really conducive to this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I thought it'd be a good time, and it was a good time.
It was.
But
it was.
Weekend at Bernie's 2 is so much worse than I remember.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that one better than the first one.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. I was corny and cheesy and terrible as these movies are, Weekend at Bernie's 2 actually entertained me more than Weekend at Bernie's 1.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough.
That is interesting.
Can you tell me why? I don't know why.
Okay, well, I have two theories on this. Because I think I own Weekend at Bernie's. I don't know if I own the sequel. But I am a big fan of Bernie.
Wow, Allison, you own it? That's awesome.
I do. It's embarrassing.
Hardcore.
I know, very hardcore. But I couldn't tell. I mean, it'd been a really long time since I'd seen Weekend at Bernie's 2. And so I was excited to see it because I'm like, I can't remember the last time I watched this. And it was just so much worse than I remember it. But admittedly, I don't know if it was because we were a little, I don't know, inebriated from the beer ponging, and maybe by the time number two rolled around, we were not so interested in sitting in the movie theater and watching the film.
Right.
But it didn't really capture my attention. I mean, not that, you know, the first one is, you know, a totally believable story, obviously, but this, I don't know, the second one just, it didn't seem as funny maybe, or I don't know. It didn't capture my interest as much as the first one did. I don't really know why.
Well, I feel like it takes this really weird direction, like, obviously, Wiccan and Bernie's is not rooted in truth.
Right.
But.
Not yet.
But then all right, of a sudden, yet. So then, like, throw in all this voodoo, hoodoo stuff just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You're like, well, okay. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
Well, at least they didn't, like, completely bring him back to life. I thought it was kind of just a quirky, like a movie like The Mask.
Right.
Jim Carrey's The Mask. Like, it's ridiculous because, you know, obviously none of that's going to ever happen, hopefully. Cross fingers.
Right. Hopefully.
But it's not so far-fetched, I guess, maybe. I don't know what I'm saying. It's not, like, I didn't see it as far-fetched. But the first one I kind of did.
Right.
But it was, I guess, because it was so, the movie was so normal because he was just dead. Like, right. I thought, when I saw, well, flashback. Back in 1993, I guess, I went and saw Jurassic Park in the drive-in.
Nice.
Ooh, fun.
And it was a double feature, so it was Jurassic Park at 8 and Weekend at Bernie's 2 at 10. So, what is
that? That is quite the bill.
Yeah, I was 8, I guess. So I saw Weekend at Bernie's 2, and then I grew up thinking I'd seen Weekend at Bernie's because I was stupid. So I thought the first one he was going to be dancing around. And then I thought the second one, he would be dancing around some more in a different locale. And so when there wasn't any dancing in the first movie, I was kind of disappointed. And then the jokes really weren't panning with me. And the crazy sidekick was, I think he was kind of forcing his comedy. Like, he wasn't very comedic. Like, sometimes, you know, this person was born with kind of a funny personality.
Yeah.
Felt like it was a little forced. And he wasn't. He was kind of like imitating, you know, someone like the nerd from Weird Science or something. You know, he was trying to like project another comedian or something.
Right.
What did you guys think of the actors? The main two guys, actually, not Bernie and not Bernie 2.
Not Bernie 2.
Let me get to Larry and Richard.
Larry and Richard. Admittedly, I think this is a girl thing. Maybe it's a 80s babies girl thing, but most girls have a thing for Andrew McCarthy. And I think that might be what even has me owning one of the Bernie movies is because Andrew McCarthy is in it. So I'm already sold halfway there. And I think it also speaks to Kate and I on a personal level because upon viewing these films, we've come to realize that we are very much like these two characters, these lovable oafs as they are. And sadly, I think I'm more of Andrew McCarthy's character, and you're more of Jonathan Silverman's character.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Sadly.
Not that we've ever carted around a dead body, but I think
that's not out of the realm of possibility.
Not yet. Exactly.
Sadly, it could happen, and I probably would not be totally surprised.
McCarthy is from famous films like St. Elmo's Fire, Pretty in Pink, which I really enjoy. I forgot he was in that. He was one of the main characters, I believe.
Yes.
And Mannequin with the from Sex and the City.
Oh my God, I love Mannequin. Tyler, we should do Mannequin. I would come back on for Mannequin.
That on the list.
Because I wonder.
We should actually have a mannequin on as a guest.
should do a double feature of Mannequin and Lars and the Real Girl and like compare the two.
doesn't actually come alive in Mars and the Real Girl, and I didn't really like that.
Hey, in Ryan Gosling's mind, she did.
Yeah, exactly. So,
could really talk about that.
I like that.
I mean, I think, you know, on a goofy personal level, we maybe, or at least I enjoy Weekend at Bernie's more just because they're just so goofy and the way that they were behaving. I was like, I feel like these are conversations we've had. Whereas by the time we got to the second one, I just was like, okay. The dancing around, it just seemed less funny to me than when they literally had to cart him everywhere and, like, tie him to their shoes.
Right.
And then one was never totally paying attention. He's off, like, the back of the speedboat, and you know, he's hitting the thing, and he's making all this noise, and neither one of these two can, like, figure out what's going on. It was just, like, to me, it was a little bit more madcap in the first one, I guess, where it just cracked me up a little bit more. I don't know.
Well, yeah. this is, I mean, I don't want want to say that Weekend at Bernie's is in any way realistic.
No, my God.
But when they get to Weekend at Bernie's 2, they take this body and they shove him in a suitcase and they like jump on the suitcase and they step on him to get him shoved in. But then when they pop him out of the suitcase, he's not like broken.
It's one of those things where in the first one, it's ridiculous, but he's only been dead a couple of days. And you're like, maybe this could be possible. But by Weekend at Bernie's 2, you're like, you got to be kidding me. Like, there's no way this man is still, like, not reeking of literal death. And you can cart him around and women are still going to be hitting on him. Like, this just doesn't make sense. Not that the first one really did.
They did make a point to recognize that he was starting to smell after they brought him out of the suitcase.
That is true. And
I believe was one of the funnier parts in that movie when they
had to break
his bones into powder to stuff him into a medium-sized suitcase. And then into a mini fridge.
Yes, yes. No, admittedly, I did like that touch. That they did try to sort of talk to some reality aspects of it and say, but maybe it smell bad.
Yeah, maybe by now.
It was funny, though, because I was looking at the years, and I was like, 1989 to 1993, and I was like, I really hope there's that four-year span in the setting of the movie.
Where
Bernie's been, like, cryogenically frozen for some reason, and they thaw him out, and then Weekend at Bernie's 2 starts, but... Of course, that wasn't the storyline. I could have made millions, but
sadly, you know,
well, took place immediately.
I mean, what about a Weekend at Bernie's 3?
Oh God!
So would it pick up exactly from Weekend at Bernie's 2?
Well,
because there really wasn't an ending to Weekend at Bernie's 2. Spoiler alert! Because it just ends with him with an arrow through his head. Since he can't feel pain, it doesn't really matter. You know what happens to him?
Well, I think they could freeze him, and then they could pick up, like, you know, 10 years later, when Richard and Larry think, oh, this part of our lives is over. We don't need to cart around a dead guy anymore. And, like, they're married, they've got families, and boom.
Bernie is back.
Bernie's back.
Maybe Bernie, like, registered a .com back in the early or late 80s, and, like, they have to redeem the value of that .com, but so they need Bernie.
Mm-hmm. I like this.
So many possibilities. What else could happen? I wonder.
Well,
Okay, never mind. We'll get back to that. Terry Kaiser as Bernie. He didn't do much acting. Do you think it's more difficult?
He did a ton of acting. Let me
get to the second part of the question.
Okay.
You think it's more difficult to act like a dead body than it is to actually act alive?
I feel like it might be more difficult to act like a dead body just because, like, it's not like you're a dead body on a cot and people are talking over you and pretending or recognizing that you're dead and you just have to lie there. This man had to, like, I mean, there were moments where I was like, how is he not cracking a smile or making any sort of a facial expression and actually able to keep this, like, dumb look on his face for 2 hours while these two morons cart him all over the Hamptons? And, like, I don't know. I thought it was kind of impressive that he was just, like, you know, could just play limp and just let it go.
I mean, just physically. Like, come on.
Yeah, because he had the same kind of facial expression through both films. Like this,
exactly.
Like, he died kind of with a grin on his face, but and it was kind of goofy looking, and he kind of held that through, you know, 4 hours of edited material. Just imagine doing that for, like, you know, a month and a half.
Right, exactly. I don't know. I can't remember the specific scenes, but I know that there was one. I feel like it was when they were trying to walk and catch the ferry, and they had to tie his shoes to their shoes. And he, you know, I'm assuming is, you know, a fully grown man. He's got to weigh a certain, you know, a good amount. But he was able to play dead enough while those two had to, like, actually carry him and try to, you know, shuffle him around. And I just kept thinking, I'm like, natural instinct. You wouldn't want to just let these two people be in charge of whether or not you fall on your face or not and, like, actually hurt yourself.
Yeah.
And he just let it go. He just let it be. It would be interesting to know what the dynamic between those three were, you know, in filming to kind of have. It's almost like this ongoing trust exercise. You can cart my limp body all over the place, and I will trust that nothing bad will happen to me.
Yeah, I wonder if he was, like, whispering stuff to try to make them crack during filming.
Please, God, don't drop me.
Well, yeah. I would love to see, a DVD extra with Terry Kaiser doing commentary and being like, this is what I was thinking during the filming of this scene.
Yeah.
Because what could he possibly be thinking? Stay limp.
Don't move.
Don't move.
Don't breathe.
Look dumb.
I don't know. And even like, I mean, luckily he had those sunglasses on the majority of the time. Yeah. But when he didn't, like, you know, you have to just look, you know, dead-eyed, I guess. And I just can't imagine that that's easy. I don't know.
Maybe. Like how the morticians from, like, the police department didn't remove the sunglasses.
Oh, I know.
Even they're after he was in, like, the little drawer they put dead bodies in. I should watch more CSI. I don't know what those are called. Speaking of Terry Kaiser's role in these movies, Weekend at Bernie's 2 featured a large amount of dead guy dancing. Did you guys have any critiques of his moves? I thought they were pretty comical. I thought this added to the film, even though...
Well, I will say, in our viewing of it, we were privileged to the fact that part of the game was whenever Bernie danced, you and the audience were also supposed to dance like Bernie. And as has been made mildly popular by YouTube, there is a dance called the Bernie that we saw a lot of that afternoon while Bernie was busting his moves on screen. So I think that interactive element really added to the hilarity of Bernie.
Right. Where it starts with the legs and then he does like the chest thump.
Yeah, and the shoulders.
Yeah, and he like gets himself up, backwards.
Exactly. I mean, that alone I felt was the best acting right there. Yeah. Is that this guy had to like do this like, you know, limb by limb dance move into a standing position.
Go ahead.
As Allison mentions about the Bernie dance craze. The funny thing is, like, the Bernie dance thing didn't get on YouTube until, a couple years ago?
Yeah.
So, Weekend at Bernie's. Weekend at Bernie's 2 has this weird sort of urban reach where kids in the projects are dancing like a dead white guy and making it look really hip.
Yeah.
So Weekend at Bernie's 3 right there in the projects.
Yes,
done. There we go.
Done.
It's Weekend at Bernie's meets You Got Served.
See, what happens, there's going to be that one scene where Bernie starts dancing and everybody in the street is seeing him do it, and so they start joining in, and then there's, like, an organized dance scene among, like, everybody on, like, you know, whatever, 23rd Street.
Oh, yeah.
In Harlem or some other inner city.
I see this.
In the projects. I was legitimately laughing, guffawing, if you will, during the parts where those two voodoo guys were trying to bring him back to life in the bathroom stall.
Yes, yes.
And they couldn't figure out that music was making him dance, and then he would stop dancing and just face plant straight onto the floor. Did you guys remember that part?
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
It was pretty comical. I thought that was – the physical comedy in Weekend at Bernie's 2 was a lot more
prevalent. That is true. That is true.
Because – spoiler alert, he really doesn't die until the middle of Weekend at Bernie's.
That's true, and I had forgotten like that. Yeah, I had forgotten
that, he was alive for so long.
Yeah. Which would maybe kind of explain something.
And he was becoming a likable guy. Like, he was bad, and he wanted to kill these guys. But I was like, oh, Bernie's not such a bad guy. I wonder, because I hadn't, like, I finally remembered I hadn't seen this one. I was like, I wonder if he's not dead, and he comes back to life, but then dies again in the second one. But he was legitimately dead the whole time.
Right.
So, but
I just remember, I mean, you know, Bernie, when you think of these movies, you always think of him as the dead guy who's being, you know, kind of schlepped around.
Right.
And I always kind of forget that obviously in the beginning of Weekend at Bernie's, he's alive and he's a character and he has a personality. And I always like somehow forget or block that out. And I remember watching it and being like, yeah, this guy sucks. It really isn't so horrible that he's kind of dead throughout the most of this because he's mean and this is not cool.
And being harassed for the rest of the film.
He's like, he's trying to kill these two little underlings who think that they've done this amazing job, and he wants them to be knocked off.
Right.
He's not a nice guy.
Was the assassin in Weekend at Bernie's that was trying to kill, I guess, everybody?
Yeah.
Is he the guy from Happy Gilmore that was helping out?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
I think that is the same guy, because I remember watching him being like, this guy looks so familiar, and I think it is the same guy from Happy Gilmore.
He's the guy that was helping Shooter McGavin try to like ruin Happy's arm. He's like, all right, Shooter, I'll see you at the Red Lobster.
yes.
Looking for more of his material, check out Weekend at Bernie's.
Speaking of
bit characters, Barry Bostwick in Weekend at Bernie's 2, more popular as the mayor from Spin City.
Yeah.
He was fairly funny. I wouldn't say outrageously funny. He didn't carry the film, I'll tell you that much.
No, he added to it. I definitely would say that he added to it.
I think he was the head of the corporation that they worked for, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was worth a mention. Barry Bostwick, everybody.
No, definitely worth a mention.
Yeah,
definitely
he was an unexpected delight.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into like his acting school background or anything.
I think Spin City was a good enough shout-out for Barry.
Spin City. Check it out. Last question, I guess, last serious question. The comedy in this movie, did you guys, like, it wasn't your run-of-the-mill comedy, I don't think. Like, there are a lot of movies where you can kind of guess what's going to happen next, you know, what the characters are going to say. And, you know, after watching this, I was like, okay, I was thinking it was going to be a goofball comedy, but it really is just two guys, and if you think about it this way, it is just two guys, possibly real-life guys, who are responding to this in a slightly comedic way.
Right.
Like, they're not outrageously funny, because people in real life sometimes, unless you're, you know, medically insane, aren't really outrageous like you see in movies.
Right.
Like, you know, Jim Carrey and Liar Liar, or, you know, Adam Sandler, and what's the one where he plays the baby? I don't even know.
What? The one where he plays the baby? That's one of those fake trailers.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Oh, okay.
Just the trailer itself.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm referring to. But I thought it was a, you know, if you look at it like that, you can see like two normal guys who are, you know, slightly comical in their back and forth dealing with a dead body. Like, the most outrageous part is the dead body.
Right, is the dead body. I honestly, and I think this is the reason why I do enjoy this movie, and it might just play to my sense of humor, but I really do like the dynamic between Andrew McCarthy and Jonathan Silverman in this film. I think it is very funny that obviously Jonathan's a little bit more of the straight man, but he plays that really funny manic line where Andrew McCarthy is so lackadaisical that Jonathan's trying to keep things together, but he's also right on that line of being a little manic himself. And so when the two of them, when things just start to unravel, I always find those to be the funniest moments because neither one of them really knows what to do. And their dynamic that is established early on before they're dealing with this kind of crazy situation, it stays true throughout, where they're like, you know, no one gets, you know, totally outlandish or completely goofball. They're just, you know, these two guys, this is kind of how they interact. And this is exactly how they would interact if they found that their boss was dead and they didn't really know what to do about it. So it did, you know, to me, I thought the comedy was funny, and it was based mainly in like their interaction with one another that always cracks me up.
Well, I think that even though they establish very well, very early on, who they are and how they react to things, you see as the movie goes on that Jonathan Silverman's character, Richard, starts sort of falling apart, and you can see it in like the way that he dresses. You'll just notice that his shirts are no longer, you know, tucked in. And it's this little thing that absolutely makes sense. He's so uptight that if this happened to him, if he was carting around a dead body, this would absolutely happen to him. And that's a lot funnier than if he was like so straight-laced through the entire film.
Right.
So there's, you know,
there are little bits like, and then you notice that Andrew McCarthy suddenly begins wearing like Bernie's Rolex.
Yeah.
Because he just grips it off of the dead body. And I think Jonathan Silverman does mention at one point, and Andrew McCarthy naturally is like, he's not using it. And that's funny because it's just so ludicrous. And it's just like little moments between the two of them that those always crack me up where, it's like these little things you can kind of see like the cracks as these two are kind of trying to like get it together.
All right. Now I'm probably going to watch these again then, just to, because I guess you guys have seen them a couple times and you've seen
them. Exactly.
Yes, we have.
Good for you, though. Good for you.
Thank you.
But I've seen, I saw Weekend at Bernie's 2 when I was a kid, and I've seen two of them this weekend. So maybe a couple more viewings, I'll start to maybe appreciate it a little more.
I'll start to appreciate it.
That's good. Any last minute thoughts? This is a pretty brief Weekend at Bernie's duology discussion, but I think we did it all right.
I mean, what else can you say about Weekend at Bernie's?
I think you need to say check it out.
Oh wait, can we talk about one thing that we briefly talked
please.
About at the beginning? Okay, so the three not dead people, Jonathan, I'm blanking on their names, Larry and Richard and Gwen.
And the girl.
Gwen, the love interest, Gwen. Gwen, who maybe this was a thing in the 80s movies, but Gwen is supposed to be a summer intern in school.
Yeah.
And she's 35.
Yeah, she looks about 35.
Like, what is happening there? Like, that whole thing, and with Jonathan, like, kind of living with his parents, and Larry living in, like, this weird rat trap somewhere.
Right.
Like, it just kind of, that kind of cracked me up, because I was like, really, guys? We're how old in this film? And I don't know how old they were supposed to be, but then I started getting the impression that Richard was a little bit older, like a lot bit older than Gwen, and then I started thinking this might be really creepy that he's trying to hit on like this summer intern.
Yeah, and she is the summer intern, and she gets roped into this, and she kind of goes with it too.
She
resists it And then she's like, well, I mean, God.
What are you going to do?
She finally sees her boss dead, and, you know, she does the mouth over the...
Yes.
Or hand over the mouth, but she doesn't really scream. So, yeah she handled it pretty well.
Yeah, she did.
Considering they were carting around a dead guy who just washed up to shore.
Exactly.
Interesting trivia. The Bernie's house isn't actually at the Hamptons. Do you know where it was?
I don't know.
It was in North Carolina.
Oh, really?
And the house itself was built for the movie. And I guess the state or whoever was in charge of that beach area said, yeah, you can build the house for the movie, but you have to tear it down after filming to return the environment to its original state.
Oh, man.
Wow.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
And can we just talk really quick about how epically 80s that house was?
Yeah.
It was pretty magical.
It was with the Miami Vice.
Those insane couches that made no sense that were strewn about in crazy pastel colors everywhere.
And that catwalk on the second floor, which, I mean, every house needs a catwalk.
Naturally.
And the whole neighborhood party hops to just have a house on the beach.
That was the best part.
I wondered about that. Like, who decides, like, okay, the party is over here. We're gonna move on. Because it's this pack of, like, 60 people. Who was the one blowing the whistle and was like, okay, time to move next door? That I would have loved to have seen that.
I think it was originally Bernie, but he was dead that day.
Yeah, he wasn't.
No, they stayed there for a really long time.
Yeah, they had no idea where to go. There's no one there to lead them. Oh.
Do you guys have a problem that Weekend at Bernie's 2 doesn't actually take place at Bernie's?
It made me a little sad, I'm not going to lie.
You guys wanted to see that house again, didn't you?
I really did want to see that house again. I wanted to see that little Porsche golf cart that Bernie drove around.
That thing was great.
That thing was amazing. I remember as a child always being jealous of that, because remember when you had those red Fisher-Price cars?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think I distinctly said something to my father where I was like, why can't I have one of these? And he was like, wow, you don't understand the world at all. A Fisher-Price car and a Porsche are two totally different things.
And a fairly weird sweet moment in Weekend at Bernie's 2, which I kind of got a, like, my little heartstrings went plucking, I guess, when Bernie, he dances to music, and so they're on this, in Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Yeah.
In case you haven't been keeping up. He can dance on this one. He can hear the island music, but he's also going towards this treasure chest that is apparently underwater.
Right.
And so... Get your Twix out.
Uh-oh.
Okay. I'm done.
I'm just kidding.
How dare you?
I lost my train of thought. He was dancing, and he was walking into the ocean, and then he'd stop when the waves would hit his head. And they're like, well, why'd he stop? And the voodoo lady was it was like a dramatic pause, almost like a, you know, an emphatic pause. And she was like, he can't hear the music under the water. And I was like, oh.
I remember that coming.
And I never do that in anything. I never go, oh. But I did.
Weird moment.
I mean, we can agree this packed with those weird moments. You know? I'm just saying, like, I was heartwarmed when poor little Richard finally got Gwen alone on that lighthouse. And that poor man looked right into that lighthouse light and fell crashing down those stairs. And just ruined his romantic moment with Gwen. And then when he finally got it back together and he's, like, going to close the deal on the beach, good old Bernie washes up on shore. And, of course, it's like, where is Larry during all this? Larry's, you know, sleeping somewhere.
And then Larry tries to have his own romance in Weekend at Bernie's 2, which is...
I felt less funny.
Less funny, less charming. Yeah. I was less involved in that. Much more involved in Bernie this time around.
Uh-huh.
With the ice queen he was trying to win over. Told him to F off.
Yeah. Oh, that woman.
Pretty funny. Well, I'm good to go on Weekend at Bernie's. I guess you guys want to do closing thoughts, recommendations, Kate?
I recommend Weekend at Bernie's.
Really? All right.
Really?
I'm just kidding. So Weekend at Bernie's, not Weekend at Bernie's dose.
Yeah.
Weekend at Bernie's, sir.
Someone held a gun to your head and was like, you could only ever watch one Weekend at Bernie's film forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It would have to be Weekend at Bernie's. Like, I mean, obviously Weekend at Bernie's 2 has got some great dancing, mm-hmm. and it's got some fantastic music.
And the arrow through the head.
And the arrow through the head, and the goats, the rotisserie chickens.
Yep.
The boat scene where he just gets... Oh, no, it's a rickshaw scene. He just gets owned by the foliage.
You know, there's a lot more realism in Weekend at Bernie's, and that's why I recommend it.
Okay, Allison?
I mean, out of the two, if that's what we're talking about, I also would recommend the first one.
Gun to your head, you had to watch one of the two, you'd pick the first one.
I would pick the first one. Right. I really would. I don't know, I felt that the dynamic between the two, Richard and Larry, for me was funnier in the first one.
All right.
But that's whole personal opinion.
I, of course, gun to the head, would choose Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Or the dancing, we know.
Yeah, the dancing, Barry Bostwick. They had the little cartoon credit scenes at the beginning.
That is true. That was pretty. I did enjoy that one.
And that was like that. That was kind of like a common thing with movies in the 90s. Like they would do.
It was.
Like
yeah.
This isn't the 90s, but Better Off Dead with John Cusack.
Yep.
It had animated credits. Did you ever see Drop Dead Fred?
Oh
yeah,
I didn't watch that forever.
An animated beginning, and that was kind of in the same vein as Weekend at Bernie's 2. I felt like.
Yeah, I think we briefly talked about that when those credits started up. I was like, why don't they do this anymore? This is hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, it was funny.
I think they actually feature animated credits for Mannequin 2.
Oh.
Ooh.
Another.
Ooh.
Whew, that is one.
Mannequin Duology next podcast?
Yeah. Yeah, might have to.
In.
With the guest Mannequin from Macy's. I thought something else to say about Bernie. Yeah, I guess that's it. Bernie's 3. Look for it soon. Yeah. Go into the projects.
Exactly.
All right. So, yeah, I guess that's wrapped up. We can get straight to this new game that I want to been playing, the Apple II. I think I'm going to do another podcast this week. But, again, I don't know what movie I'm going to do, so I'm not even going to bring the Apple II out.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
This awesome computer that I built. I'm going to trust my own judgment. We'll bring the Apple II back in operation when Ben gets back from rescuing Jason Saskatchewan.
Without him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. It makes me sad to even power it up. You can't hear the music under the water. All right. Let's play this new game I came up with. I think I'm going to start playing game show music now. And it's called Know Your Specs, or Up Your Specs, depending on how dirty you want to be. I know.
Up Your Specs.
We've played Up Your Queue before. Well, I know it's called In My Netflix or In My Queue, and I called it Up My Queue, so I called it Know Your Specs, Up My Specs. The point of the game is, actually, the tagline is the game where confidence can win or ruin the day. Each contestant is given 3 categories, and they choose the one that they are more confident in guessing. Year, director, or star. Once you pick which category you are confident in guessing the answer to, I'm going to give you the movie. And then you have to guess that movie's year, that movie's director, or that movie's star. The year, of course, refers to the year the film's release. The director is, you guessed it, the director of the film. And the star is the first listed actor in this new big book of movie knowledge that I purchased for any and all future game show movie-related outgoing. The first build, so that would be the first person on the list.
Okay.
So let's meet the contestants. I'm going to start with Allison because I've been starting with Kate all night. Allison, out of the 3 categories, year, director, or star, which one do you think you're more confident in guessing based on your movie knowledge?
I would probably have to go with star.
Okay, star.
Yeah.
Okay, I have 3 movies. I get to choose which one I'm going to use that have to do with star. I'm going to give you an easy one.
Thank God.
Jurassic Park.
Ooh.
The first named star in my big book of movie knowledge.
Okay, I'm trying to think of who the first name will be, and I'm going to go with Sam Neill.
Oh, that is correct. Sam
Neill. Yeah.
famous for his stint in Merlin, and I would have also accepted Jeff Goldblum, even though he wasn't the first villain.
I was hedging. I was like, I'm not sure if it's Sam or Jeff.
But I mean, Goldblum doesn't show up until later.
That's why I think.
But I'm such a big fan of his, I would have accepted it.
I appreciate that. Amazing.
All right. All right, Kate, which one of the three categories, year, director, or star, are you more confident in guessing based on your movie knowledge?
I think I will also have to go with star.
Oh, you're running me dry on the stars. Okay.
Ooh.
all right.
Sorry.
The movie is... No, it's okay. I just know these are kind of hard, so I don't want to, like, stump you. Don't be mean. The movie is Killer Inside Me.
Okay.
First build, star, in The Killer Inside Me.
I'm going to say Casey Affleck.
That is correct.
Yes!
I've also accepted Kate Hudson.
Nice.
The last star movie was John Tucker Must Die. Do any of you
know? Oh, I would have had so many for that one.
But who was the first build?
I know, now I'm trying to think. Is it
Eyebrows?
Full name, Kate.
His name is not Eyebrows now.
is it Jesse Metcalf?
That's correct, Jesse Metcalf. Right. I would have also accepted Ashanti.
Oh, I was going to say Sophia Bush.
See, the star category was going to be the most difficult.
Really?
Yeah, but you guys rocked it. You guys want to go another round and use year or director?
Yeah, I could try director.
All right, Kate. Oh, wait, who was that? I'm sorry, I can't tell.
It was Kate. You got it right.
Kate. All right, you have to guess the director.
Okay.
Which one? I'm going to go 2009's Julie and Julia, starring Amy Adams and Meryl Streep. Julie and Julia, I'm going to tell you based on experience. It's the tale of a young lady going through Julia Child's cookbook while posting the recipes she tries on a blog, whilst flashbacking to Julia Child's trips to Europe, I guess. I don't know.
It says a lot about this film that, even though I know this is wrong, my first thought was Nancy Meyers?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That's a good guess.
But I know it's not. I don't know.
Does anyone know?
I have no clue.
It was Nora Ephron.
Oh, I did know that. That's bad.
Nora Ephron directed Julie and Julia from 2009.
Yes, you're right.
Allison, you want to go one more? Year or director?
I'll be crazy. I'll do year, even though I know this
is
going to work.
Yes, these are my favorite movies in year.
Okay,
the movie is Rambo, First Blood, Part 2.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Whoa.
The sequel to First Blood. First movie in the Rambo series to be called Rambo. Hence the title.
I'm going to think early 90s. I'm going to go with 1991.
Final answer. It was 1985.
Oh, 1985.
Rambo, First Blood, Part 2, starring Sylvester Stallone. 1985.
I would have gotten the star on that one. I knew it was a lie.
Alright, let's just run through the rest of the movies. The year that Multiplicity came out.
Ooh, 1993.
Oh, 1996.
Oh, I was going to say 7.
Well,
the
90s are a big jumble.
Yeah.
The year Muppet Treasure Island came out.
Oh God, Muppet Treasure Island. I feel like I know this. Why do I want to say 2004? What? I don't know.
I believe that was Muppet Wizard of Oz. I don't know.
Damn it.
That's my guess.
I'm crazy off. What do you guess, Kate?
1997.
Oh, 96. Another 96 movie. Okay, my other movies were the director of The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. Nothing.
Mummy, is that like the
18th
mummy?
That's, close. I believe it was the third.
Oh.
The third mummy movie. I was about to say the third Muppet movie. it was Rob Cohen. He directed that.
Oh.
And then Heat, which was a pretty easy one, I thought. Robert De Niro.
Well, I mean, let's go a few different ways.
true.
You know who directed Heat?
No, that I don't know.
Michael Mann.
Oh. That is correct.
Watch out. Oh, watch out. Okay.
Michael Mann directed Heat. So, that's my new game.
I like this game.
Yeah? I thought it was pretty cool, too. I'm working on another game that involves a game board, but it takes a little more time to do because I have to, be creative and use stuff like that. But, if you have any comments to make about this new game, Up Your Specs, or, the more appropriate name, Know Your Specs, send us an email. Email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, or you can give us a call and tell me how awesome my game is at 904-469-NJNM. Specs of the podcast, you can subscribe for free in iTunes. Just type in Not Just New Movies Podcast in the search bar. You can leave us a review, and thank you if you did. You can check us out on Facebook and Twitter. I'm pretty verbal on the Twitter account, @NJNMPodcast. We have a couple of new followers. I can read them off right now. I believe Cater Bland mentioned me in one of her messages.
Right, in two? Oh.
I got an email for that. Oh, I got two. All right. Our new followers include Glenn Mortimer, @Aircast, spelled with a K. @GeekDealHQ, @DarkAgair, I don't know, and Geek Forever. So we got a couple geek-themed followers. Thanks for, taking the time to click follow.
Yeah.
And again, thank you everyone who listens and downloads and streams and whatever you do. Go straight to the Mavio site and watch the movie there, I guess. Where can we find you guys on the internet? Are you guys easily accessible?
On the internet?
Yeah.
Well, you can find both of our writings, obviously, at gordonandthewhale.com. And my Twitter is @CaterBland. That's my name with only one E in the middle. K-A-T-E-R-B-L-A-N-D. No, K-A-T-E-R-B-L-A-N-D. That's
nice. Nice.
I know. Yeah, I knew a couple of people had a problem with that last time you were on. I didn't really have a problem with that. I thought it was very creative.
I get a lot of flack for it, but I'm sticking with it. It's my online.
It's one word at this point. Like, it's not KT Bland. It's Cater Bland.
Yes, Cater Bland.
No underscores. None of that nonsense.
Fuck that shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Explicit tag. Boom. Allison, where can we find you? Where can we stalk you, more importantly?
Yes, where can you stalk me? I am also on Twitter. @ Allison Loring, all one word.
Yes.
So it's AllisonLoring. I believe it's spelled correctly.
Yeah, there is two L's because I keep typing your name with one L.
I know. It's my crusade to get people to remember that my name has two L's. I forgive it. But yeah, two L's for me.
And you're the soundtrack dominator, right, Gordon?
I am the soundtrack dominator for Gordon and the Whale.
She just rapes those soundtracks.
Explicit tag, yes.
Explicit tag, oh my goodness.
You can find me at thesolarsentinel.blogspot.com. I'm still holding on to the blogspot tag. I'm not getting a .com anytime soon.
Don't do it.
Destigen.blogspot.com. Closing, coming to a very exciting close. So if you're one of two people that read that blog, check it out. Don't get behind because, I don't know, maybe I'll put it down for repairs. I don't know. Ben Pearson, who's usually hosting this podcast a little more adequately than I usually do, you can find him at twitter.com/BenPears, like the plural for the fruit, Ben Pears. You can find him writing and performing comedically on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast and writing at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com. He writes reviews for new movies at notjustnewmovies.com. I'm really ragging on him. He needs to step it up with the Not Just New Movies. And, so you can find Ben there. We miss you.
We do miss you.
I don't mean that.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. You can't hear the music under the water.
We need to make that a hashtag.
Yeah, that's fundamental.
You know, the music under the water.
You guys might enjoy this. Music for tonight's show was brought to you by the letter Oingo Boingo.
Nice.
Who are currently not on tour, because I looked up, because the band has hearing problems. That's what the article said. Song, of course, Dead Man's Party, the dance remix. So if you want to find that and other Oingo Boingo hits, you can probably find their stuff on iTunes. I don't know.
Amazing.
But music for our usual show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com, and they're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out there. Allison and Kate, so lovely to have you on.
Well, Tyler, thank you for having us.
Yeah, seriously.
Thanks for playing my games.
Loved the game.
Okay, good.
Big fan of the new game. Yeah.
You good? Okay, good. I was hoping for loved it, but liked it's acceptable.
Oh, I said loved.
Oh.
Okay, yeah, I'm trying to be the next Merv Griffin. I don't know if anyone knows that. Lifelong shame.
Adored. I adored it.
There you go.
I want to invent Extreme Jeopardy, kind of like Extreme Chef, where you have nice. Jeopardy questions under natural, you know, disasters and stuff like that.
Yes, I like it.
I won't get into that now. Again, thanks for coming on, and we'll see you guys next time on the National Movie Podcast.
Sounds good.